About civil war, is that what's happening in Iraq right now?
Well, I guess we could play around with semantics. Certainly, the civilian leadership of this country doesn't believe that there's a civil war. But it seems to me that when you've got several large groups in a country, all of them heavily armed, all with distinct paramilitary forces, and they're shooting at each other and blowing each other up, that sounds like a civil war to me. You know, call it what you will, but the sectarian violence over there is extreme. I mean, Americans are responsible for a lot of civilian deaths, but not as many as Iraqis themselves. And as I've said a number of times to friends, that I mean, where we were, it seemed like the times that they stopped shooting at each other is when they got together to shoot at us. So I think that there's a fragmentation going on. I've heard this called a war of dissolution, you know, mm-hmm. much like Yugoslavia was when Tito was out of the picture. Mm-hmm. It may be, and this is my personal feeling, that the best thing to do would be to help Iraq, you know, fragment in a way that caused the least amount of harm and stress mm-hmm. to the people there. However, the Iraqis are the ones that have to decide this and not us. So mm-hmm. whether the country stays as a unified state or whether it fragments into three separate states, you know, we have to be able to pull out and manage that process from afar, because our presence there is just going to make matters worse.
Mm. Unfortunately, a lot of Americans do believe that for some reason we have been entrusted with the power to dictate how other countries should behave. And having traveled internationally quite a bit, I've been very fortunate, but I think through that experience I've realized we don't have anything over anyone else.
No.
I mean, this is maybe in many ways one of the best countries in the world, but we are not the only country with the only idea of government and culture and all of that.
Well, I think that even a passing knowledge of history of the last couple of hundred years would argue that the United States in particular has not been very good at making other states, you know, dance to our tune. You know, the people who advocate our continued presence there, you know, always hold up Germany and Japan. What I know of history is that the people in our government and the people in our military who managed those occupations and those reconstructions were far more progressive in their ideals and far more tolerant and accepting of divergent, you know, ways of looking at things than the people now.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reconstruction of Germany, the reconstruction of Japan was undertaken with a different attitude
mm-hmm.
than what we have in Iraq.
It's interesting to bring up Germany too, because if we think about America and compare it to an invasion by Germany in that era, you know, not to hold up any of the horrible things, but the Germans always had a plan. If they took something over, they
yeah.
already had officials that went right in and took over
right.
in a way that created a solid administration. We're not doing that in Iraq.
Well, this is one of the really troubling things, and which really kind of shaped much of my time in Iraq, is just the kind of slapdash crisis management approach we've taken to this occupation. That even if we grant that there was a reason to go in there, for the sake of argumentation, we should have gone in with some idea of how to make this work. You know, this was done on the cheap. Any military officers who argued, you know, against that were essentially fired or shut down. The military leadership was shuffled so that people came into positions of power who would tell people what they wanted to hear. We went in with too few people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'll give you a perfect example of this. The base that I was at should have had three times the number of people doing guard duty. As it was, we worked 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, for almost 10 months without any days off.
Wow.
The Army doctrine is that no one is to be on guard duty more than 4 hours,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's in pairs, so you can pair each other off
right.
because you're not effective after that. You know, my guys and gals were up in the towers for 12-hour shifts.
Mm. And if we adopted a different approach altogether, if we just overwhelmed them, the Iraqis, with kindness and support, you know, discovered what each individual sect needs and wants and went in and responded to that. Okay, would that work? Could we end this?
Again, my feeling, personally is no. I think we have so tarnished ourselves that that would be met with as much suspicion as anything else we do. It's frankly what we should have done at the start, but now I think it's too late. I think that if we really cared about the Iraqi people, we really cared about stabilizing Iraq, we would back out and let other people do exactly that, and we would accept it as a black eye and all the rest of it. But if we really cared about it, that's what we would do. Mm-hmm. I think that any time you have a military trying to play the part of the peaceful, supportive, kind, and gentle organization, the contradiction is too strong. Mm-hmm. You know, I carried a rifle everywhere over there, a helmet and body armor. It's hard to convince someone that I'm a nice guy when I'm armed.
What if it's not the military, though? What if it's civilians, or at least soldiers in civilian clothing?
Right. Well, I mean, right now it's too dangerous. Mm-hmm. That's why you don't see NGOs and others making much headway in there, because it's just too dangerous. Mm-hmm. Because one of the effects of our inept occupation of this country has been to criminalize, you know, a good deal of the population. That I think the most recent statistic I saw on, you know, estimating Iraqi deaths has been about a third have been caused by American and coalition forces, a third have been caused by sectarian violence, and a third have been caused by crime. The place is the Wild West, you know, and kidnappings and revenge killings and all of those things, extortion, robbery, theft, you know, that's part and parcel of it. So I think before we could, you know, put in, you know, the kinder, gentler occupation, the country would have to be much different.
Yeah, thank you. Before we wind this up, the advertising that's used to attract, you know, very young men and women into the armed services, it's very enticing.
Yeah.
It's very manipulative. Of course, it's advertising. They use a strategy that's attractive to that very particular demographic. They create excitement and purpose. In light of the fact that you're against this war, how would you fairly advertise the military to young people these days?
Well, it's a very interesting question. I mean, the Pentagon spends hundreds of millions of dollars every year on Wall Street advertising firms. I mean, these things are cooked up in advertising houses. I mean, I'm living proof that, you know, be all you can be, you know, can suck you in. But in terms of a more honest approach, I think that there is certainly something to be said about military service being, I want to use the word duty, but at least, you know, an honorable calling. I think that the military, when it's used appropriately, can be something a person can be proud to serve in.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not necessarily saying that we shouldn't, you know, appeal to a person's sense of responsibility to their society.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, I think it has to be much, much more straightforward. That 90% of being in the military is drudgery, is boredom, hard work, and the other 10% is sometimes more excitement than you ever want to experience in your life. It's a difficult profession that has its rewards, certainly, but also has its challenges. And so I think that if advertising showed soldiers, you know, asleep in a foxhole in a foot of water in a rainstorm, of being smelly and dirty after a week in the field eating MREs.
MRE, what does that stand for?
Meal ready to eat.
Okay.
Those are the packaged meals that we eat.
You
know, of going for 2 or 3 days on 2 hours sleep a day.
Mm-hmm.
And said that you do this because of your responsibility to serve, then I think that you could have both. I don't object to those qualities that are used to pull in young men and women of patriotism and duty and all of that. What I object to, really, is the cynical manipulation of those very honest and sincere feelings by the people at the top of the chain of command, using soldiers, using young men and women for really unethical reasons.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much. This was very interesting, very informative. I appreciate your time. And on behalf of many Americans, thank you for your efforts both to do your duty and service to the United States. We do appreciate that. I know you went in for all the right reasons. and also your willingness to talk about it frankly, the war in Iraq.
Well, as a parting comment, let me just say that patriotism takes many forms. And we hear a lot of spoken about today about our heroes over in Iraq, but there are also heroes in the States. The people who are speaking out and saying that this war was started for questionable reasons, that our leaders need to be held accountable for the decisions that they make, these people are just as patriotic as anyone who's serving over in Iraq. Because these people say that our country is good, that it's based upon good values, and they want to protect those.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've been called un-American, I've been called lots of things, but speaking out against this war to me is just an extension of the oath of enlistment that I took all those years ago. This is about defending our country.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Andy Sapp. It was good talking to you.
It was good talking to you. Thank you for having me.
Bye-bye.